Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Canadian Energy Services and Technology Corp conference call and webcast with respect to the recently announced results for the fourth quarter ended December 31, 2016, and the recently announced proposed offering of $300 million senior unsecured notes and tender offering for the existing 7.375% notes. Presenting for the company today will be Mr. Tom Simons, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Craig Nybor, Chief Financial Officer. Please be advised that this call is being recorded. A question and answer session will follow the end of the presentation. Please also be advised that this conference call may not be recorded or rebroadcast without the consent of Canadian Energy Services. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Craig Nybor. Please go ahead, Mr. Nybor.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for attending today's call. Before we start, I'd like to note that in our commentary today, there will be forward-looking financial information and that our actual results may differ materially from the expected results due to various risk factors and assumptions. These risk factors and assumptions are summarized in our fourth quarter MD&A and press release and in our annual information form dated March 9, 2017. In addition, certain financial measures that we will refer to today are not recognized under current generally accepted accounting policies, and for a description and definition of these, please see our fourth quarter MD&A. At this time, I'll turn it over to Tom, our President and CEO.
Good morning. Thank you, Craig. Thank you to everyone for joining our call. What I'm going to provide is an overview of Q4 by business unit, an update on our current activity by business unit. I'll speak briefly to our strategy to become the clear number three oil field chemical company in the North American land market. And we're going to share our outlook for the business based upon $50 oil. And we'll remind callers of what happens for the business if commodities do slide lower again. At that point, we'll turn the call over to Craig. He's going to provide everyone with a detailed financial update, including our just announced plan to refinance our bond. At the end of that, we'll take questions and then wrap the call up. As usual, I'll start with Canadian operations. In fourth quarter, Canadian drilling fluids continued to make a significant contribution to the business. We exceeded a third of the market share in the Canadian drilling fluid space. We averaged 68 jobs throughout the quarter. I'm very pleased to report that this trend has continued through Q1, where we've been north of 100 jobs for most of the quarter. We peaked at 120 in February. The cold weather here in the West in early March, while we're all complaining about it for driving and shoveling sidewalks, it's allowed industry to keep running about 300 rigs well into March. So it looks for us like the quarter is going to be solid and probably allow operators to get rigs successfully moved in late March and onto pads where hopefully a good number of rigs can work through breakup. Last night, I got a note from an analyst asking, how do you guys keep doing it? How do you keep having such a big market share and growing these treatment points in such a competitive and price depressed market? I thought about that and thought it was probably a good lead in to explain why it is the people hire us in our business. In our business, we sell products when we solve problems. Problems can be technical or problems can be financial. We're the only major drilling fluid company in the North American market that can leverage chemical manufacturing and the supporting scientists and laboratories to distinguish our mud technology and capabilities. And we only have that because of our significant and growing production chemical business. If we had not diversified the business back in 2009 and 10, our founding drilling business or drilling fluid business would not be nearly as successful as it is today. So that's part of the answer of how we do it. We can utilize brine-based drilling fluids better than anyone in industry. Our patented and proprietary corrosion control chemistry, oxygen scavengers, lubricants are all internally developed and manufactured. This helps us be highly successful in the deep basin here in Western Canada. We help people drill wells faster, which saves them money. So our solution to them is financial. We have proprietary fluids for the SAGD market, for the heavy oil cold recovery horizontal market, and we do well in that space because of that. Our local talent in Southeast Saskatchewan helps us hold a significant portion of that market, which is where we initially started our production chemical business because of our deep relationships and commitment to that market. We have novel ways in Canada to run invert and control losses that help us win a lot of business west of 5, west of 6, and in Northeast BC. Those are the wells that are deeper and go further horizontal. They require more complex drilling fluid systems, and the volume of product consumed on those wells every day is greater than shallow wells. Our significant vertical integration of the mud products that we sell has allowed us to be profitable with enough volume and no price increases. My personal view is that service costs in general cannot go up until oil breaches $60 and gas stays over $3. The customers need to make better returns on their money before they can pay more for services. So we need to keep our fixed costs low. If oil can hold over 50 and gas can be near 3, the Canadian drilling fluid business can make a contribution to the business in all four quarters of the year. Because of road bans, Q2 gets very slow in Western Canada, but we need less than 20 jobs to run through the quarter to break even. We had a zinger of a winter, and we like our leading position in the drilling fluid market. PureChem continues to grow in all regions in Western Canada. The Deep Basin is growing enough that we plan to establish greater infrastructure in the GP area over the next year or couple of years. That will include a rail spur, increased warehousing, and bulk storage for liquids. Heavy oil and oil sands also continue to grow for PureChem. We've had a good winter for frac sales through PureChem to pressure pumpers as well. Considering we entered the market for production chemicals organically in 2010, we're really proud to firmly be the number 3 production chemical company in the country. We're nearly complete the expansion of our Carlisle blending facility, which continues to produce increasing volumes every single month. We have tremendous people in PureChem. The company will continue to expand infrastructure to support our expected growth in PureChem. We'll also continue to strengthen our team by hiring people that can solve problems. Again, that's how we sell product. At Clear, Q4 was a decent quarter. The business unit benefited from increased rig count. And through Q1, Clear has started to increase its presence managing water for our customers. If that trend holds up, Clear can also make a nice contribution to the company, probably in 3 of the 4 quarters, and hopefully carry its own weight or break even in Q2. Sialco also had modest results in Q4, but has really taken off for us in this past couple months. I'll remind people that Sialco is a business that we acquired about 16 months ago. It's based in Delta, BC, runs 9 large volume chemical reactors. It's basically a smaller version of what we operate in Kansas. We can react or build molecules at Sialco. Through the past couple months, Sialco has increasingly started to become part of our internal supply chain for production and frac chemicals for Canada. Sialco continues to also work hard to develop new technologies that can be used across the whole company. We're very pleased with Sialco's contribution, and we believe that if upstream activity remains modestly busy, we can get a good contribution from our operation at Sialco. In the U.S., I'll start with AES, our drilling fluid business. Through Q4, we averaged 61 jobs, with 36 in West Texas. We also had a decent amount of work in the Northeast, the Eagle Ford, and the Mid-Continent market. AES was able to generate a modest financial contribution in Q4. We're very pleased to report that today we have 87 jobs, 48 in West Texas, 14 in the Northeast, 10 in the Eagle Ford, and 9 in MidCon. And we've done that without needing to open new infrastructure facilities. So we're driving more volume through the infrastructure that we ran through the end of 16. We're grinding 12 to 15,000 tons per month at our barite mill in Corpus Christi. I'll remind listeners that we need to be above about 7,500 tons to be economic at the mill. At AES, we win work through technology, service, and competitive pricing. Our patented MMH system, or technology, lets customers drill in the Delaware Basin with a string-less at intermediate casing than oil-based muds. By right-sizing our U.S. drilling fluid business in 2016 and properly assessing which liquid plants to continue to operate, we can sell enough product to make money at today's prices. We're basic or vertically integrated in the key drilling fluid products we sell. Our team is constantly reformulating to improve results for our customers. We are known as the most technically advanced drilling fluid company in the U.S. land market. As wells get deeper and the horizontal legs get longer, we think we can grow our position in the market. We've moved AES Frac over to the JChem Catalyst side of the business to copy what we've done in Canada successfully through PureChem. We didn't have much of a financial contribution in Q4 from Frac, but we have seen good sales in Q1. So we're confident and pleased with our strategy to try to enter that market. As operators complete what they drill, we think we can sell the products to both pressure pumpers and E&Ps in the U.S. We're selling scale inhibitor, biocide, microemulsion or nanotechnology flow enhancers, FR, and small amounts of guar slurry. We continue to work towards being basic and cationic friction reducers, which are the polymers used in brackish water. In general, as trends continue in that space to put more sand into the formation that's drilled, that increased volume of frac fluid takes chemistry. We're a basic manufacturer of much of that chemistry. We have infrastructure across the lower 48 where we can move product through. So we think that in a busy upstream market, there's a lot of torque in our business around frac. On to U.S. production chemicals. JChem and Catalyst is now being run by Mr. Vern Disney. Dr. Gene Zaid and his son Jason West have moved on to another venture. The transition is going very well for the business. We continue to grow treatment points in the U.S., particularly in Texas. We're steadily utilizing technology like solid chemistry that Gene helped build JChem around. We're using it to solve problems and win new business. We like our position, particularly in West Texas, where Vern lives. That's where rigs and frac spreads have gone back to work, which means production growth is shortly to follow. And that's production that we can treat. On to our strategy overall to further establish the business as the clear number three oil field chemical supplier for the North American land market. We run a very decentralized sales and management model. Each business line runs its own P&L. They're run by working managers, which means people who can and do sell product and who are technical experts in their field, and in most cases, proven successful entrepreneurs. Each business shares common chemical manufacturing, shares access to problem-solving scientists who work across North America in our 8 laboratories, and share a common infrastructure to move products. The people who lead the different business lines live and work where the action is, which is critical and one of our competitive advantages. We plan to continue to expand our reaction capabilities, meaning higher temperatures, to continue to vertically integrate or expand our chemical lineup. As we grow the business, we have lots of unused throughput in our 2 reaction facilities in Vancouver and in Kansas. We have blend facilities in 2 places in Texas, one in Saskatchewan, one in Nisku. Those facilities can easily be expanded as required. What we do is take concentrated chemistry, we build in the reaction facilities to those blend facilities, and then formulate or finish the products so they can be sold to the end user, the E&P. If oil can hold its own at 50, if gas can be around $3, all of our business units can make money for the company. While we want price increases, we don't need to rely on price increases to become profitable, unlike most of the equipment providers. If commodities soften, we can keep our head above water because of the adjustments we made to the business in 2016. Our fixed costs remain low enough. Personally, I don't see price increases for the company until oil establishes itself over $60. So we'll run the business accordingly here that way. I'll now turn the call over to Craig.
Thanks, Tom. Q4 results are reflective of the operating leverage that Tom's been describing in our vertically integrated consumable chemical business model. As the activity has continued to rise, we're able to put additional dollars to the bottom line without pricing power, as Tom mentioned. Now that we've exceeded the base levels of activity to cover our fixed costs, the next job or sale, more of that gross margin can find its way to the bottom line. Reflective of this fact is in our 2016 full year results of $50.4 million of adjusted EBITDAC, $41.1 million of that has been achieved in the second half of the year as activity has picked up. Specific to Q4, CS generated revenue of $187.7 million, versus $165 million in Q4 2015 for an increase of 14%. Geographically, that breaks down to $120.9 million in the U.S. and $66.8 million in Canada for Q4. From an EBITDAC perspective, CS generated adjusted EBITDAC of $23.8 million in Q4 versus $16.4 million in Q4 of 2015 for an increase of 45%. As Tom mentioned, these results have been driven by the growth in all our business units, and all our business units contributed positive EBITDAC in Q4. From a balance sheet perspective, we have ample liquidity on our senior operating line to fund the build of working capital we are experiencing with the ramp-up of our activity in the U.S. and the traditionally very busy Q1 in Canada. In addition, today we announced this morning a tender offer for our $300 million of notes due in April 17, 2020. The tender offer is 104.2, which will give our current bondholders equivalent economics of what a redemption would be on our first call date, which was coming up April 17th, 2020. The tender is conditional on successful execution of our proposed offering of $300 million of new senior unsecured notes that we launched this morning as well. We have launched this new offering this morning, and we'll be marketing it in the early part of the next week with an expectation to price our new notes sometime later next week. The offering is obviously for refinancing the existing 7 3/8 notes. The new offering is $300 million of 8-year non-call-for senior unsecured notes. CES believes this is an opportune time to add 5 years of term to our term debt at what we expect to be a more attractive interest rate. Additionally, today we were upgraded by one of our rating agencies, S&P, and the other rating agency, DBRS, reaffirmed our rating. Also, recent high-yield financings that have been done in the Canadian market have been well-received and oversubscribed. Based on how our business performed during the downturn and how it has returned to profitability in the early part of the recovery without pricing power, I think this puts us in very good stead in comparison to recent debt issues. In addition, we have continued to grow the production and specialty chemical businesses in both Canada and the United States, which is the more annuity-like revenue stream that underpinned our decision to first enter the high-yield market back in 2013. During the downturn, our bonds outperformed because what we told investors in 2013 came true, that in a downturn, our working capital turns to cash on the balance sheet, and we were able to be undrawn on our senior lending facility despite the negative downturn from the end of Q2 2015 through the end of Q4 2016. We also think that our new offering provides a unique opportunity for Canadian high-yield investors to put some chips down in the Permian. Roughly 65% of our business today is generated in the United States, with roughly half of that, or roughly one-third of our overall business today, coming from the Permian, where, as Tom described, we see many opportunities to continue to grow in drilling fluids, frac chemicals, production, and specialty chemicals. At this time, we'll turn it over to questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from a line of Mark Westby with AltaCorp. Your line is open.
Drilling fluid side of things, could you provide perhaps a little more detail on pricing this quarter, how it was impacted across both Canada and the U.S. compared to last quarter, and perhaps provide some pricing indications going forward for the remainder of the year?
Mark, we didn't get the beginning of the question. Could you repeat it, please?
Yeah. I was just saying good morning. On the drilling fluid side, we were interested in perhaps a little more detail on how pricing this quarter was impacted compared to the prior quarter and perhaps some pricing indications going forward for the remainder of the year.
Well, I'm still meddling myself in mud sales all the time, Mark. There is no pricing power. We need to move volume. We need to keep fixed costs low. And because we make most of the high volume products and the specialized chemistry that we sell, our cost of goods allows us to make money in this market. So I think the expectation that we have for the business is if oil, and we'd be very happy if it stays north of 50, I don't see any price increases for drilling fluids this year at that commodity price. If oil's established over 60, I think then the operator is getting a good enough return that we may have success getting price increases through. We're going to make money in drilling fluids by moving a lot more product through our infrastructure in the Deep Basin for the oil sands, for West Texas, for the Eagle Ford, for the Northeast. It's not going to be because we get a 5% increase.
Okay, great. And then my next question, turning to production chemicals, obviously treatment points grew considerably quarter over quarter, and you attributed that some degree to activity increases and market share gains. Going forward, as things kind of shift, are you expecting the type of work will also impact treatment point growth, or is it going to be a lot of market share gains, or can you give us some more indications in that regard about how treatment points will shift going forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, not every job's the same. All of these wells that we treat, they're like a person and their medicine. Everyone's unique. It's why you need real-time lab support. You need to be able to build the molecule and then quickly reformulate. As operators open up the Delaware Basin, these are new formations that have yet to be solved production problems. As the Deep Basin opens up, there's paraffin issues, stuff turns sour. So as these wells are deeper, as the size of the fracs are bigger, as the horizontal legs are longer, I would say in general, the trend is that the treatment is more complex, which allows us to make margin, and I think it allows us to win the work in the first place because we can beat the resellers that are just using sort of off-the-shelf technology. We can customize the chemistry for the well because we manufacture it. So I'd say the trend is in our favor, but we need to temper that with the reality that stuff only gets drilled and completed if the operator makes a return. So if oil goes back to $40, I think people hit the pause button, even though they've probably hedged a lot of oil sales. We need the commodity to cooperate, but where the money's going, it's the right kind of work for us, basically for all of our business lines. More complex mud with more volume, bigger fracs mean more chemistry in the fluid. And when you treat these deeper wells, that heat, the pressure underground, those create issues that you solve through chemistry.
Okay, great. Thank you for that color. And then for my last question, if you're looking at top tier acreage which is being drilled right now in the U.S. compared to some acreage you might see drilled, for example, in the Permian as oil prices improve, does that how does that impact your sales? Is there a greater greater requirement for drilling fluids and production chemicals at that point, or is it pretty even, or how does it shift with lower quality acreage?
I think geography the winds at our back on geography, based on the results that our customers are putting out on wells that are newly completed. And if you follow the money, if you look at what people are paying for acreage in the U.S., when you look at some of these private companies that have sold to blue chip E&Ps and they're taking back equity, they must believe they can increase the value of these E&Ps or they wouldn't take the equity. So I think these are smart people that are running their businesses to be successful. I think the Delaware, so west of Midland up into New Mexico, that's probably going to be where the operator makes the best wells. There's infrastructure there to get oil and gas to market. There's new infrastructure going to get gas down to Mexico. There's lots of water there, surprisingly, because there's slightly brackish groundwater that's available to be used for fracking. So these high volume slick water fracks are easy to get the water for the operator. And if you look in Western Canada, the Montney and the Duvernay, the Wilrich, some of these deeper plays are where all the money's going. The prices for land in Canada are obviously less than in West Texas, but when we read the analysis that firms like you guys do on these plays, I think that's where the money's going to go. And it looks to me like oil sands is continuing to get lots of reinvestment. We saw a good return to SAGD drilling this winter. We see people delineating again, which is probably foreshadowing for work to come later to grow production. So I think the deeper stuff, conveniently for us, looks to be what will come on, and then that benefits all of our segments.
Okay, great.
If
thank you, Tom.
Answers your question.
It did, yes. Thank you. Thanks, guys, and congratulations on a great quarter. I'll open up the line.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star, followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Steve Karemeyer with Claris Securities. Your line is open.
Oh, good morning, guys.
Hey, Steve.
So we've talked a lot about growth at the PureChem division over the past few quarters, and I'm not suggesting the growth was easy, but do you think you've picked most of the low-hanging fruit that was available to you, or with the investments you mentioned here in your prepared remarks, do we expect that that pace of growth to continue for the foreseeable future?
Well, everyone's forecast always looks like a hockey stick. Every time we look at anything for M&A, everyone's going to kill it for the next 5 years. The business was a day-to-day grind, Steve. A lot of people worked very hard to start something from zero and turn it into number 3 in the country in 7 years. I'll remind people that the sequence for us was coming out of 08-09. We got scared that price discounts that were required at that point to keep the drilling fluid business were going to eat all of our profit. So we quickly worked at backward integrating the mud business by building a blend plant in Saskatchewan. Credit to Jason Waugh, one of the officers of the company. He was convinced that we could enter the production chemical market. And Jason doesn't take no for an answer. So 7 years later, we've got infrastructure across Western Canada. The growth has been largely in conventional oil production. We think we may have 15% of that market, and now we're just starting to be viewed as a tier one supplier to the E&Ps, and because of that, are winning a lot of good business in the deep basin. We're treating oil sands and heavy oil production. That's kind of the prize in the business, and it's largely handled by the two majors, not the small mom and pops or local private companies. So we think that the best days are to come for PureChem, but it will require us to continue to put some infrastructure in place, like I mentioned in Grand Prairie, and most importantly, continue to attract the best people in the industry. If your people can solve the customer's problem, if you can lower their lifting cost, grow production, cut drilling days, allow the frack to deliver better results through flow enhancers, that's why the customer buys your product. So I think PureChem can continue to grow. We're going to keep doing what's made us successful. The best people supported by the best scientists, with the biggest toolbox to solve the problems.
Okay, great. Maybe just moving to the drilling fluids here, in particular in the Permian. So, I mean, we've seen the rig count there more than double since last year's low. I'm just curious, has the amount of drilling fluid volumes needed actually more than doubled as the wells get deeper?
It's not that linear. We have 48 jobs today in West Texas. About a dozen of them are using our patented water-based MMH technology. A big portion of the rest are using oil-based mud. It's sort of well-specific, Steve, but if we have twice as many jobs running today as we did a year ago, yeah, roughly we'd be moving twice as much volume.
Okay.
And if you want to look back into our own supply chain, 12 to 15,000 tons a month of barite is roughly double what we were pushing out of that thing when we first commissioned it a year ago.
Okay. Well, that's great. Maybe just one more question on the credit facility. You mentioned you'd drawn $45 million just this year to date. I'm assuming that was just to increase some inventories ahead of maybe some expected activity here, or is that for something
else? It's in real time, Stephen. I mean, activity is quickly ramped in Canada right out of OPEC.
Right.
So, you know, a pretty big inventory build here in Canada, and then the chemical businesses continue to grow on both sides of the border, and then the U.S. drilling fluids business continues to grow. So we are, you know, $45 million into the line today. I see that going up for the next month or two. Then we'll get harvest back from, call it, the heightened activity in Q1 in Canada. And depending on ramp in the back half of the year, it probably flattens out. So, you know, I think we'll peak, like I say, probably on the financial statement basis, our peak number will be at the end of Q1. And, you know, I don't think we're going to exit the year based on our kind of own outlook at a much different number than on the line than we are right now.
Okay, great. That's all I had, guys. Thanks.
Your next question comes from a line of Ian Gillies with GMP. Your line is open.
Morning, guys.
Hey, Ian. Hey, Ian, we can hardly hear you, so can you either speak up or...
Yeah, sorry, guys. With the recent M&A in the Permian on the EMP side, can you just maybe talk a bit how that's impacted your business and maybe how you may have had to shift some customers around or how some of your customers may have benefited from what's happened?
Well, we don't want to name customers. To me, that's like putting your name on a building as a service company in Calgary. That seems to be a bad omen, but our best customers in general have increased their acreage in West Texas. We see them selling assets in other parts of North America, probably to strengthen their balance sheets and focus their spending there. So you know, we don't win every time acreage changes hands, but we haven't had a major customer loss due to M&A, and some of our bigger customers have increased their position out there. And I'll remind people, 48 jobs running on the mud side, and we conservatively think we're north of 20% of the production treating market in the Delaware, and it might be more than that. And we're now supplying frac product to both E&P and pumpers in that market. We've got a blend plant in Midland, two labs. We've got people that have tremendous relationships of trust in that market because they're experts. They've worked that area their whole life. We've got this MMH technology for mud that it's like that system was invented for the Delaware. So the M&A out there has been good for us, and we think validates keeping the two liquid mud plants in that market, Ian, running and idling other ones where it looks like the returns for the customer are poor.
And we don't get to make this decision, but I think it's pretty widely believed that for operators in West Texas, and we talk about $50 oil across our whole business, but for a lot of the operators in West Texas, they have a lower number that in their mind makes it go around. So we think it out. Not only does West Texas have the biggest upside from here, but it probably has the best downside protection from here.
No, I would agree. Thanks very much. That was that's helpful. And I apologize if I missed this in the prepared remarks, but the growth CapEx for 2017 was probably a bit higher than I would have been anticipating. Are you able to provide any additional details
on
the uses of that capital?
Yeah, Ian, we don't have, call it approved projects that be at that number, but we wanted to give people guidance as to the rough spend that probably will end up being on the docket by the end of the year. Tom mentioned some of the things that we will be doing. We're finishing off Carlisle, Saskatchewan blend facility expansion. We will be most likely expanding our NISCU facility where we make chemicals as well for the Canadian market. And we're looking at putting some infrastructure down up in the Grand Prairie area of Alberta this year. We need to build more delivery trucks for the chemical businesses on both sides of the border. You know, there's going to be fences and yards and tanks going up as well with respect to that. But it's we don't have an approved list of projects that gets us to that. We just wanted to give guys guidance, and we've been telling investors for a while that, you know, if we continue to grow, expect to see a CapEx number for us, you know, all in with maintenance CapEx, you know, in that $30 to $50 million range every year, and I think that's probably realistic. So that's kind of how we put out that number.
Okay, thanks. No, that's helpful. And the last thing, and I may be wishing and hoping a bit here, I mean, you talked a bit about breakup and looking okay in Canada. As you talk to your customers in Canada right now, do you have any sense of what the back half of the year may look like, or is it still a bit of a waiting game from your customers at this point?
We don't probably know anything different than you, Ian. The last 10 days has probably been tough on the psyche of people. I would guess it wouldn't maybe be quite as robust as Q1 in Q3 and 4. But we didn't think, I was hoping for 200 rigs this winter, and the industry here ran 330. So I think if service costs, and I might get voted out of the service union for saying this out loud, but if service costs can stay down and people can find ways to make money at these prices, I think that helps people work. And if there's 225 rigs, 250 in Canada in Q3, 4, our upstream businesses here will do well. And I think we're going to continue to get more of the existing production chemical business so PureChem can grow. I guess it's wait and see.
Yeah. No, I appreciate the views. Thank you very much. I'll turn it back over.
You know, I'll give you a specific example of how we're going to go into the rest of the year, Ian. we ran 25 staff mud engineers this winter and 82 contractors. These are highly qualified people. A lot of them used to be our employees. We have furnished those consultants with all the technical testing equipment, things like that, computers, gave a lot of IT support. But we're going to keep the business with a variable, lower cost base and hopefully be able to toggle up and down quickly to get the work and properly do it for people. What we have kept whole is sales, technology, engineering, lab, supply chain, and then, of course, you know, the ability to make the molecules or grind barite and things like that.
Okay. No, that's helpful as well. So thank you very much, guys.
Again, to ask a question, that is star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of Ben Owens with RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Morning.
So you guys touched on the fact that you have a lot of unused reaction throughput capacity in both the Vancouver and Kansas facilities. I was wondering if you could provide an estimated level of utilization on those facilities, and then, you know, was wondering also what's the maximum level of drilling or production that you could service with that existing capacity that you have at those plants?
Sure. We would estimate, Ben, both of the reaction facilities and some reactors would be different than others, but basically we're about a third consumed in each facility. Kansas is a unique facility. Each one of our reactors is almost like its own ecosystem. We've got proprietary sort of plumbing and build around that reactor to make an individual chemistry. We don't use the same reactor to make five different chemistries. The way Gene built the business, he wanted a special chemical business, a specialty chemical business, and really a lot of the unused throughput is that we're running reactors that might only be a third full. And so you don't really have an increase in labor or energy consumption to make the next gallon or barrel of molecule. Around drilling fluids, we were running 10% of the market in the U.S. when there were 1,700 rigs. We had less infrastructure than now because our barite mill wasn't operational. And we've traditionally been 30%+ in Canada, so we have run in excess of 200 mud jobs in Canada. So if the stars line up and commodities go up, we can take extra work if the industry has it there to give.
Yeah, and I'll remind guys that, you know, we entered the Permian market on the drilling fluid side only in the fall of 2013, and since that time, in addition to the barite grinding facility in Corpus, which is perfectly located to feed that market in the Eagle Ford with barite, we built two brand new mud mixing facilities in West Texas, one up in a place called Kermit, which is just near the New Mexico border, and one in Big Lake. So we have, you know, brand new mud mixing facilities, I think better infrastructure in the Permian Basin for drilling fluids. So, you know, all the other advantages we think we have with technology and people, we also have infrastructure that we can leverage to a much higher rig count in West Texas.
Okay, great. That's great color. I was also wondering, you know, you guys mentioned M&A in the press release. I was wondering what kind of opportunities you're seeing in the market right now, and is that more focused on Canada or the U.S. market?
Well, private equity is certainly looking to divest the investments they've made in oil field chemicals. So that kind of stuff is being shopped around. For us, we would look at technology. We would maybe look at ways to accelerate growth at the wellhead or in the pipeline space. We're not in the refining space. So we would look for technology or a way to get a foot in the door of a market that we're not in, or to grow our share. But our biggest thing, Ben, is we want to bring people in the business that want to be here and can run their own P&L, run a business and share the common resources we have. So that's really, that takes a lot of the private equity stuff off the table because the people that built the business sold it to PE. So we're going to be very fussy. Myself, I'm going to dedicate the rest of this year to helping AES sell Mud in West Texas and trying to help PureChem in Canada. Craig and I can look at M&A, and we've got a team here that helps us with integration and assessing opportunities. But it's not high on our list. We think that we want to focus on growing organically what we already have, but be open for opportunities to get better.
Okay, great. And then the last one for me, you guys talked about, you know, seeing potential price increases in the drilling fluids business, you know, if oil moved above 60. You know, I was curious about the potential for, you know, getting pricing improvement in the production chemicals business. How does that compare to the drilling fluids business, if you had to compare and contrast, you know, at the same commodity price improvement level?
Myself, I think that applies for everything we're doing.
The guys that have been in a few cycles that are in the business with us, their expectation is at some point the dominant players will send out the form letter to their customers that says pricing is going up X percent across the board for our products to you on this date. I think our guys feel that if that happens, they'll have an opportunity to have conversations. We won't be a form letter company, never have, never will. But I think we need probably Ecolabs and Baker to lead the way with something, and then we can come in behind. The reality is it's not an equipment business. So, you know, we don't get to jam guys when the equipment's in short supply, and we don't get jammed as much when there's too much equipment. It's a chemical business. And as Tom mentioned over and over again, it's a volume business more than anything, and we have to prove ourselves to our customers every day with giving them value and success.
What I would say about pricing, Ben, is, you know, we've seen some of the big integrated service companies use their balance sheet to grow their market share, specifically in drilling fluids or in the frac space, and they got that work by taking the work at a loss. As they come off bottom on price, I think that it opens the door for us to win back work based on performance, not just unit price. So I think those guys that got the work by being willing to work at a loss, when they need to change that, they better have got a lot better at what they do, or they're probably not keeping the work. They only got it because they were the cheapest, or they'd have had it in the first place.
Got it. Appreciate all the color, guys. I'll hand it back.
Our next question comes from a line of Jason Zhang with Cormark Securities. Your line is open.
Thanks. Morning, guys.
Hi, Jason.
So just quickly on the CapEx, you know, given the pullback that we've seen here and your commentary around, you know, the fact that there's sort of no explicit projects sort of in the backlog, what is your flexibility on sort of moving that up or down as we progress throughout the year?
Well, I think we have complete flexibility with that, but we also see big opportunity with a lot of that CapEx, particularly focused on the PureChem business. You got to realize we're growing PureChem, and it's kind of like a big boulder. It takes a lot to get that moving, and now it's moving. And unlike in the U.S. where we've done M&A to grow the chemical business that came with infrastructure, PureChem as an organic growth platform, you know, is going to require us to build that infrastructure. So can we turn it off if we have to for whatever that reason might be? Absolutely. We're not committed to really anything beyond, you know, probably 10 of the 36 today that we've given guidance on. So we have lots of flexibility. And obviously, if there's opportunity, we have multiple avenues to get capital if there's additional opportunities.
Got it. So fair to characterize your view as kind of a 2 to 3 year longer-term growth trajectory on PureChem, and that's why you're spending the capital.
Well, we think there's a much longer-term growth potential in PureChem, but we started PureChem in southeast Saskatchewan and moved into Alberta, and now is where the opportunities are, being in the Deep Basin. We just see Nisku and something up in the Grand Prairie region as things that make sense for our business.
Understood. So delving onto the frac chemical side, you know, you talked about a decent uptick in frac chemical sales in PureChem in Canada. Can you quantify or sort of give us some sort of scope on what that would have been versus, say, Q3 or early on in 2016?
Well, we're not going to segregate. In early 16, we had one small pumper customer in Canada. We exited the year with two. Both of those companies were much busier at the end of 16 and through Q1 than they would have been this time a year ago. In the U.S., we had virtually no frac sales, didn't have much of a contribution in Q4 either, but started to see that business contribute over the last couple months.
Okay.
And I'll remind people, it's all additive business for us. We have the infrastructure to move and stage these products. We've got a small focused team on it. And the products that we're going to be able to sell are the things that we make. And a lot of those products are used either in drilling or in treating production. So it makes sense for us to be manufacturing those products already.
Okay. Great. That's helpful. That's it for me. Thanks, guys.
There are no further questions in queue at this time. I will now turn the conference back over to our presenters.
Well, we'll summarize by saying that, you know, we're in the weeds with our people. We're sensitive to commodity prices. We know that our customers need to make money for the drilling and frac part of our business to be busy. We've got the cost base in our drilling fluid businesses in both countries to where if we can be north of 50 jobs in the right places in the U.S. at AES, and anything probably over 25, 30 jobs in Canada, both of those businesses can make a financial contribution at today's pricing. PureChem in Canada, JChem Catalyst in the U.S. We've got the right people with the right vertical integration to support those businesses to allow us to, we think, grow our production chemical and frac chemical business in today's market. And longer term, we see more oil coming out of the oil sands. We see more oil coming out of West Texas, and we're very well positioned, we think, to grow in those growing markets as commodity prices create that outcome. With that, we'll conclude the call. We want to say thank you to our employees for a great winter, and very much to our customers. We appreciate your business. Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.